Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Sarah Malka Winter, and today we study Parshas Vayetze. Parshas Vayetze begins with the journey that Yaakov begins out of Eretz Yisrael to Haran, his monumental vision of the ladder with angels ascending and descending, the promise of Hashem to protect him and return him to Eretz Yisrael, and Yaakov's vow to turn this place into a place of service for Hashem upon his return. The story continues with Yaakov's arriving in Haran, his agreement with Lavan to work 7 years for Rachel. Lavan deceives him. Yaakov unknowingly marries Leah. He commits to working another 7 years for Rachel, and the first four of the Shvatim, the tribes, are born to Leah. Rachel remains childless and recommends that Yaakov marry her maidservant, Bilhah, who then has two children. Leah does the same with Zilpah, and she has two children. Leah has two more sons and a daughter, Dinah. And finally, Rachel is blessed with her first child, Yosef. An angel speaks to Yaakov and tells him it's time to go home. This is followed by Laban's many attempts to cheat Yaakov, and Yaakov finally leaving secretly, being chased by Laban. Laban is warned by Hashem not to touch Yaakov, and Laban and Yaakov make a treaty not to harm each other. The Parsha concludes almost full circle, with Yaakov returning to Eretz Yisrael, being greeted once again by angels. In chapter 29, when Yaakov meets Rachel for the first time, he cries. He kisses her, and he raises his voice, and he cries. Rashi brings down two midrashim to explain. Lefi she'tzafa beruach hakodesh she'ena nechneses imo lekvura. The reason he cries is because he saw that he would not be buried with her. Davar acher, another way of looking at it, is lefi she'ba biyadayim rekanios, since Yaakov had come empty-handed. And he said, Eliezer eved avi abba hayu biyadav nizamim utzmidim u'mikdanos. Eliezer, my grandfather's servant, when he came with nose rings and bracelets and delicacies. Ve'ani ein biyadi klum, and I have nothing. Lefi sheradaf alifaz ben Esav b'mitzvas aviv acharav lahargo v'histigo. What happened? The Medrash shares with us that Esav had sent his son Alifaz to murder Yaakov, and that he barely got away with his life, with Alifaz robbing him of all he owned. And now, the contrast between him and his grandfather's servant Eliezer hit him, and he cried. The Pnei Das, Rav Eli Meir Blach, the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, asks, the first medrash alludes to a huge and powerful prophecy that Yaakov was made at least subconsciously aware of why they would not be buried together, that Rachel needed to be buried right there on the road to Beis Lechem. He saw that he would have a nation, the nation of God, that they would arrive and build the Holy Land of Israel, and that their time during the First Temple would not be sustainable, that they would sin, they would ultimately be exiled, that they and thousands of years of Jews would cry at the grave of Rachel. They would cry, and that she would ultimately have the right words because of her grace and her goodness, because of the way she led her life, she would have the power to gain forgiveness for the nation. That ultimately, this salvation of the nation would be brought about by this girl who would be his wife. This is what he saw. And the power of that vision is what made him cry. The Pnei Das asks, I can understand this. What is perhaps difficult to understand is how someone who is living life on such a lofty level, who is seeing and crying about matters thousands of years away, is this a man who also cries with shame that he doesn't have presents to bring his bride? Can this be the same person? And the Pnei Das answers yes, and that is what it means to be a person, We can be occupied with deep and mystical and holy and powerful ideas, and we are still a person who will have room in our psyche to worry and deal with very human realities. To deny this, says the Pnina Das, is to live a lie. He actually deals with this earlier when discussing the vision of the ladder that Yaakov sees in chapter 28. A ladder standing on the ground, reaching the heavens, with angels ascending and descending. There are so many midrashim and commentaries who explain the meaning of this vision, of this ladder. The Medrash says this was a vision of Sinai, where the two worlds became connected as with a ladder. Or, it's the Beis HaMikdash, also a connector of worlds. Rashi says it was, so to speak, a changing of the guards, where the angels that had protected Yaakov in Eretz Yisrael are now returning to heaven, and the angels that would protect him outside of Eretz Yisrael would descend to care for him. But there is a very interesting medrash that reminds us that the image of Yaakov was actually on the heavenly throne, and that the angels knew this image, they knew this face. And when they saw Yaakov sleeping here, at this place, the picture of Yaakov asleep, the fragility, the weakness, it shocked them. Could this be the Yaakov that is on the heavenly throne? This very physical, very corporeal, weak creature? They could not comprehend this reality, and so they ran up to look at the image on the throne. And then they ran down to stare at Yaakov again. It did not make sense to them. The Pnina Das says an angel cannot comprehend this, but we can. We know as human beings that we can reach the most sublime of visions and realities, literally live in the clouds while our feet and bodies stay planted so firmly on the ground. We can be small while at the same time so great. Hashem created us with both heaven and earth within us. We get it. We understand that in fact, we are that ladder. And so we have the ability to uplift the most earthly matters to the sublime and heavenly. And that is a human being. In fact, the Chizkuni explains the ladder and the angels as giving Yaakov a visual that just as sometimes we go up to the attic but return and remain and live inside our houses, Hashem wanted Yaakov to know that he has moved locations. No longer in the heavens, Hashem is down here with Yaakov. That Yaakov's life and the way he leads it is what Hashem is concerned with. And Hashem, with all the angels, live down here, sometimes going up, but always returning down with Yaakov. In fact, Rav Hirsch says, this explains the awe and fear that Yaakov expresses after seeing this vision. When he cries out, Ein zeh ki im beis Elokim, v'zeh shar shamayim. This is nothing but the house of God, and this is the gate of heavens. This is what Hashem wanted Yaakov to understand, that he is here with us in our lives down here. When Yaakov learned that his life, his home, is to be the home of Hashem, that when the angels are looking for Hashem, they must look down here, that our lives matter. The details of our lives, the way we live our lives matter. That we serve Hashem with our lives and our challenges, he was petrified, awed by that realization. And this parsha begins very different experiences, a very different kind of story. While Avraham and Yitzchak stories involve kings and treaties and wars and land conquests and agreements, Yaakov's is all about his brother, his father-in-law, his wives, his children. But the challenges he and Rachel and Leah and his children will learn to meet, overcome, and grow from will not only be transformational, they will be defining. Our lives are not to be great because of otherworldly realities and visions, but because of the way we live in this world, the relationships we build, the children we teach, the people whose lives we improve, and the friends and family we give to. These are not the extra details surrounding the ultimate goals of our lives. These are the goals of our lives. And Yaakov's challenges will be great. Building the first Jewish family will be extremely messy. And in a way, we could say that his was a most painful existence. And when we think of all he suffered, from the persecution of Esav, the heartless deception of Laban, the painful childlessness of his wife, the tragic and cruel attack on Dinah, losing his dear wife Rachel so young, his children fighting, leading to the selling of Yosef as a slave, and losing him for decades. He had the most painful life. But he did it. He succeeded, and not only does he come out whole, he comes out with all 12 of his children, and with them united. One of the details of the experience that Yaakov had when Hashem showed him the ladder all the way back at the beginning of the story was that Yaakov took 12 stones and placed them around his head, and they began to fight, each one wanting to be under the head of the tzaddik. And Hashem made a miracle, and they became one large rock, which Yaakov will turn into a matzeva, a monument for Hashem, and serve Hashem on it upon his return decades later. And just as the rocks were many and fought and ultimately became one, and just as Yaakov witnessed his own children starting out as many and as fighting, and ultimately they finally were standing around his bed and were able to cry out, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and proclaim Hashem's oneness in unity, and they became one. Of course, this whole story of the first generation of Bnei Yisrael, the children of Yisrael, is our story, the nation of Yisrael. And we, who lost our Beis HaMikdash because we were many and we were fighting, and have spent far too many of our years in exile, many and fighting, we are learning finally that we are one. Anyone who has been paying attention to what has happened to the largest family on earth over the last month since Simchas Torah has noticed that just as the cries of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad have begun to ring out all over the world, in the Knesset, in the EU, on the National Mall, in the battlefields of Gaza, there is another cry, and it cries out from all of our lips and all of our hearts, and that is, we are so many, but we have learnt that we love each other, that we need each other, and we have become one. Thank you for learning together.